Right side. Same things. Positive way. And beginning with tonight discussing relationships between persons. Because, after all, we're living in this world with so many other persons. We have to relate. We cannot simply hide away ourselves, be a hermit. That's not very practical. We have to live. And so we can learn from the Vedic culture, the Vedic literatures, how to make our relationships beneficial. How these relationships can be cultivated so that we can achieve the highest goal. Question may be raised, is it our relationships in themselves that the highest? Let's say relationships, friends, with subordinates or seniors, or they may not, those relationships may not be the ultimate, but they are helpful. If we utilize them properly, they can be helpful for attaining the supreme goal. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll discuss some points, and if you have any questions on the particular point, you can raise your hand and we'll discuss at that time. And this way we can go through. If we have any things you'd like to discuss or clarify, we can discuss at the time. You don't have to wait till the end. Okay. So the first thing in relationships is to consider two types of insects, the bee and the fly. The bee looks for honey, and the fly looks for sores. You know what I mean by sores? Some wound on the body. If you have some open wound, a cut or something, the fly will go there. He goes for the dirty thing. But the bee goes for the sweet honey, pure. So we want to learn from the bee. And we want to look for the sweet qualities in others. You may say, but this person, they have no good qualities. No, you could find something. Good. If you're looking for the good thing, just like the bee is so determined that he goes into these flowers and finds honey. Most people wouldn't know there's honey in flowers. We wouldn't know, but because he's very eager to find the honey. And he may not get so much from each flower. It's not that he goes to one flower and fills up a big jar. No, he gets a little bit. So he has to go to thousands of flowers, taking a little bit of sweetness from each one. We can do that. Try to see some good qualities in others instead of looking for their bad qualities. After all, this is the age of Kali, the age of degradation. Everybody's got bad qualities. It's not very surprising if someone says, you know, I found a fault in this person. Not a surprise. But if we say, I found a good quality, that's better. So that should be our opening mindset, as they say. In relationships, try to see the good qualities. Then, because in the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, that's how everyone is. Everyone is always glorifying the other residents. And they're thinking that the others are greater than themselves. In the material world, it's not so much like that. We like to criticize others. We like to find their faults. And thus it becomes an unpleasant situation, full of anxiety. But the spiritual realm, Vaikuntha, there's no anxiety because everyone is friendly with everyone else. Everyone is appreciating the others. Okay, next item is to reserve. What time do we go to? Okay. Reserve thy judgments. This is a topic that is even popular now amongst secular society. They say don't be judgmental. They appreciate this idea of not being judgmental. What is it when the Bible says, judge not lest you be judged? In other words, if you judge others, then you'll also be judged. So be careful about judging everyone else. And yes, it's a fact, we should be cautious about giving judgments if they're not required. We may not be required to make a judgment. On a particular issue or a particular person's behavior. So, there's no need to make judgments when it's not required. For example, if someone asks me, what do I think about such and such's wife? She doesn't cook dinner for her husband. So, I might be inclined to make a judgment. But, without knowing the whole situation, the whole circumstance, if I make a judgment prematurely, that will not be healthy. It's like, what is the qualification of a judge? Of course, there are many qualifications of a judge, but I'm thinking of one very important qualification of a judge. Someone like to. He's neutral, yes. He hears both sides. Before he makes his judgment, he doesn't just say one side. Okay, what is your side? And this person, he took the money and he cheated me. He said, okay, good. Send him to prison for 20 years. Wait a minute. He didn't get to speak. The other one, I don't care what you said. No, then he's not a good judge. He has to hear both sides, weigh it carefully. Then, after hearing everything, deliberate, as you said, he has to be neutral. Then he makes his judgment. Based on knowledge also, not just based on his sentiments. This one is crying more. This one over here is always crying. This one must be innocent. Otherwise, why would she be crying? This one's not crying. So this one wins. No, it can't be sentimental. It has to be based on knowledge of the law. So if we are going to make a judgment, be very reserved and hear. Make sure you want to hear everything about the situation before you make a judgment. If you want to make a quick judgment without hearing, that will not be helpful. And if you're going to make a judgment, then you have to hear all the information. Therefore, if someone asks me, what do I think about such and such lady who's not cooking for her husband's meals, I will say, well, do I have to make a judgment on this? Why do I have to make a judgment on this? And they say, well, I just want to know what you think. Well, what is the relevance? I want to know before I get involved, because if I get involved, means I have to hear both sides, I have to speak with not just one side, I have to hear from the other side. What does the wife say? Why is she not cooking for her husband? What are her reasons? What is this person? What is his business anyway? He's not the husband. Why are you concerned? What does it have to do with you? And there's many factors. So sometimes we don't need to get involved in making judgments unnecessarily. We waste our time. And we may end up harming our relationships with others. For example, if I make a statement, oh, that woman, she should, you know, it's really bad that she doesn't cook for her husband tonight. So now, having heard all the evidence, but I made a judgment. Some people may not appreciate that judgment. Okay? Then, along the same line, we have a topic called sofa quarterback. Now, you're not so familiar with those terms because it has to do with American football. One player on the team, the leader of the team, is called the quarterback. Sorry to educate you in this mundane topic, but so what happens is, in America, is people sit and watch the football game on the big television. And they're sitting on the sofa. Sofa is the comfortable chair. Yeah, eating and drinking. And they're saying, throw it there. Throw it over there. Throw it. Oh! Ah! Such a nonsense. Why did he throw it over there? Obviously he should have thrown it there. Why is he throwing it there? Stupid. Goes on and on. So he's sitting there giving his critique, his opinions. But he's sitting on the chair, on the sofa, comfortably. He's not being charged by these big monsters, you know, attacking. Because that's the way the football game goes. The others try to come. Big men, they try to knock him down. So the poor quarterback, he's trying to throw the ball with these monsters coming at him. It's very dangerous. So maybe he couldn't look over here, but these people are sitting on the cushion, so comfortable, and they're criticizing. If I were out there, I would have thrown the ball over there. But if you were out there, you would have been smashed. So that's a very important point. We have to consider why I'm not in the position. Maybe because I'm not qualified. Maybe I don't have the ability as well as someone else. It's very easy to say what I would have done if I had been in charge, but But there must be some reason why I'm not in charge. Why it's not my decision. For example, if after the person says, you know, if I were out there, I would have thrown, and so someone comes in and says, why don't you join the team? Why don't you go after the team? Then immediately he's very, because he knows, if you went out on the team, he would be smashed. He would get his bones broken, because he's not strong enough, he doesn't have the ability. It's a very important point. If we're not qualified, we should not be so quick to give our opinions, criticizing others who are in the position. Okay, next point is envy. You know what envy means? Everyone? What's the translation for envy? Yeah. Finish.
Mateus.
Okay. So everyone knows what that means. Envy is the beginning of material life. Envy is what brings us into the material world from the spiritual world. The envy begins with being envious of Krishna. Why should Krishna get all the praise? Why should everything be offered to him? Why is all the girls are attracted to him? All the gopis, all the queens, all the goddesses of fortune, they're all attracted to Krishna. Why not me? He has all the money. Why not me? So, with this desire, with this mentality, we are sent to a material world, material place, where we can make believe that we're competing with Krishna. We can make believe that we're attractive, that we're wealthy. Like here, if someone gets money, he's very proud. Oh, he's driving a big car, and he has a lot of money. He's famous, he's in the newspaper. This is considered a great accomplishment if you can do this. But it's all illusion, because who cares? Who cares for these newspapers? How many people are reading them? A few thousand or a few million? But how many living entities are there, even in this universe? There's trillions and gazillions. And then this is only one universe, and there's trillions of universes. And this is just the material world, and then there's the spiritual world, which is three times at least bigger than the material world. And none of them care about you. They don't even know about you, these people. Only a few people. And even they don't really, it's all superficial. They forget after a few weeks. Even if you're in the newspaper, if you say, hey, did you see my picture in the newspaper? They say, no. So, yeah, I saw it, but I didn't read it. So, this thing, this money, how long will you have it? Anyway, the material world is based on envy. It's set up as a competition to Krishna and the spiritual world. So that tendency has to be changed if we want to be qualified to go back to the spiritual world. So envy means we want to do better than them. And we, not only that, but we want to cut them down. We want them to fail. We'd like them to fail and us to succeed. In other words, if possible, I'd like to poison him. If he's doing better than me, he's my competitor, I'd like to poison him. And that way I win and he loses. This is very good. This is envy. Oh, he's doing good. There's a story that Prabhupada tells about two friends. So they were talking. Did you see such and such? Did you know he became a high court judge? He said, no. I said, yes. Can't like or judge.
For that guy,
how can he become a high court judge? I remember when he was a little kid, he was running around naked. He was a little boy, he was running around naked. How could he be a judge? No, I saw it. I was in the courtroom, he had the gown on, he sat down, and walked in, everybody stood up, he sat down, he was giving judgments, and the other one said, well, if he became a judge, then I'm sure he's not getting any salary. Can you turn the lights on? Right side. Uh-oh. So, that's envy. We can't tolerate that someone else is successful. It just burns and hurts. They say, they have a saying that a person is green with envy. He becomes green with envy. Turns green. When you see someone succeeding, if you consider honestly, you'll see that you have some envy still in your heart also. If some people are successful, painful. And if people come and say, wow, that was, did you see what he did? It was great. What she did, wasn't that nice? Like an artist. Try that sometime. Go to an artist and glorify another painting of another artist. See what they say. Well, it's not that good. I mean, look over here, this part here. This part is, this color isn't done nicely. And this part is, this is not nice. And this part, man. Not good job. And then show them another painting. Ah, this one's not good either, you know. It's very difficult for an artist to be objective about others' artwork. Because we still have some of this envy. We have to be careful about that. Now, next point is oil your own machine. You know, if you have a machine, if you're doing some work in a, let's say some business, and you have a machine. This is your, so you oil your own machine. You don't worry about oiling everyone else's machine. Prabhupada uses this expression. Take care of your own business. Mind your own business. Sometimes we stick our noses where it's not required. It's not desirable. I'm going to solve everyone else's problem. What about your machine? Your machine's got so many problems, why don't you oil your own machine? Or, as another example is, someone wants to help others. We find this a lot when people come to Krishna consciousness. They get a little knowledge about Krishna, and they say, well, I'm leaving now. You say, why are you going? So I'm going to go out and teach. That's nice, but you have a little knowledge, but not full knowledge. So teaching, when you don't have full knowledge, especially he wants to go out and teach, it's like trying to, if the whole room is full of people whose hands are tied, you want to untie their hands, that's very good. But if your hands are also tied, you cannot untie their hands either. So this person, he wants to go out and untie everyone's hands, but his hands are also tied. So how will he untie anyone else's hands? First we have to make sure that our hands are untied, then we can open it. We can help others. Now, next point is the golden rule. Golden rule means, well, Chanakya Pandit, he put it in a slightly different way. He said, Matrabhat Paradareshu Paradravya, Paradravyeshu Loshprabha. Those are the first two. One should see other women as his mother. He should see others' possessions as simply insignificant, like a stone or a piece of earth. And Atmabham. He should see others, he should treat others as he would like to be treated. That's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So we should consider before we do something or we say something to someone, how would it feel if it were happening to me? How would I like this thing to happen to me? It's a very good thing. Generally we don't think about the other's feelings. But we should take a little time and consider, how is this activity or what I'm going to do now, how would I like this to happen to me if someone else did this to me? Sometimes devotees come to us and they say, this other person is, there's so many things wrong with him, he's impossible to work with, he's got this fault and that. So I remind them, I say, yes, it may seem intolerable, but everybody's tolerating us, he's tolerating you. So you have to be willing to tolerate others. Think about it. If others are able to tolerate you, why shouldn't you be able to tolerate them? Generally, we think that because I, what's the difficulty in tolerating me? I have all good qualities. They're all so fortunate to have my association. I don't have any faults. A few little ones. But nothing major. But this person, look at all the faults. No. We need to think, we need to see it, that actually we're full of faults. We have many bad qualities. Selfish, greedy, lazy, unclean. Sometimes I make a list. It's healthy to do that. How many things can you think of your faults? It's a good exercise. You may say, well, I'm afraid to do that because I might get, my self-esteem may get lowered. You know what self-esteem means? What's the translation for self-esteem? Did everyone hear? No, not did you hear? So you know what self-esteem is. So we may be afraid to make our list, the long list of all of our faults, because we're afraid that it'll reduce our self-esteem. Actually, it probably wouldn't hurt for us to reduce our self-esteem a little bit. Because generally, we're all thinking that we're very, you know, right up there. The best. If we didn't think we were the best, why do we do everything for us? All the money we get, we give it to us. All the food, to us. All the clothes we buy, for us. We think that the country that we were born in is the best country. And we think the city we were born in is the best city. And the family we were born in is the best family. And the body we have is the best body. Why? Because it's mine. Why? Because these things are in relationship with me. And I'm the best. I'm number one. I'm the most important person in the whole universe. You may think that that's a joke. But we actually, everyone is thinking like that. Even the little ant, he's also thinking that I'm the most important. And, oh, a Otherwise, why he comes up? You might be eating a meal. He'll come up right in the middle of your meal and take some food. He'll come walk right up. Ah, this is nice. I'll take this. He's an ant. He's coming up. He doesn't ask. He doesn't show any respect. He doesn't think that maybe I'm eating a meal. I had a plan for eating that part. And he's taking it. He said, you know, I'm taking it. I'm important. The dog, you walk by, mind your own business. Maybe you're a respectable man. You have a good education, you're a kind heart. You walk by, you bark. Why are you walking here? What are you doing here? This is my area. You didn't get permission from me. Prabhupada compared the immigration department to a barking dog. Why have you come? It's like I came today. Why have you come to Finland? What are you going to do here? How long are you staying? Where are you staying? He said, I don't remember the address. I said, but I have it right now. Okay, let's see. So this is bow. Everyone is thinking that they're the top. So, but we're not. We're very insignificant, very small, just like that ant. It's so small. We laugh. Oh, this ant. I think he's so important. But we're also thinking we're important. And we're also very small, same size. Keshagra Shatabhaga Sya Shatada Kalpita Sicha. The spirit soul, the Atma, is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. Very small. So how can we be proud if we're so small? We're thinking we're big. We're not thinking I'm so small. So don't be afraid of a healthy self-criticism. It is healthy. And it will help you because there will be a time. There will be a time when we need to remember that we're not the greatest, we're not the supreme. Or many times. And so this cultivation of this humility and reality will be healthy. But if we're always in the mood that I'm better than everyone and no one should tell me anything, we're going to get in trouble. Because that is not the right attitude. Just like, even in ordinary world, let's say a man is very wealthy, and he has a big company, 500 workers under him. He snaps his fingers, they do. So, he has to be careful that he doesn't get too carried away. They say it shouldn't go to his head. It goes to his head. The head gets real big. So then if he thinks, I'm so powerful, I have so much money, nobody should tell me what to do. So then he's driving in his car and some young policeman says, you know, pulls him over. He's like, he gets out of his car. What do you want? Look at you, young man, stopping me. Don't you know who I am? Here, look. This is my business card. Now what do you say? And the young man, policeman said, yes. I'm sorry, sir, but you're going too fast. I'm going to have to give you a ticket. What? You? You're just a young... How many years have you been on the police force? So that person says, it doesn't matter. That's not the question. I may be young, but the point is, I have a badge. And that means I may... So, the man, if he takes it too far, if he's so puffed up and proud of his position, he says, look, you young man, Get back in your car and start driving and don't bother me. And the young policeman says, no, I'm writing you a ticket. And the businessman takes it. Now he's in more trouble. He says, okay, now, here, put your hand down. I'm going to put the handcuffs. Oh, no, you're not. You tried it. So then he gets into a fight with the police. Because why? He got carried away with his own position. He built himself up so big, he forgot his relationship with others and with the government. He's subordinate still, is he not? He's still subordinate. So we should always remember we're subordinate. We're not independent. We are not the supreme. We're not the controllers. This is very healthy cultivation. And we don't have all good qualities. We've got many faults. And if we recognize that we have faults, then what does it mean? It means I can tolerate another's faults. Why are we intolerant of others' faults? Because we think we don't have any. For example, if you're in the middle of pointing out the faults of someone else, and someone else says, well, you know, you also have those faults. What? I have those faults? How dare you? He doesn't like to think that he has those faults. He's not thinking of his own. It's very easy to find the faults in others. What is it in the Bible, something? He's finding the splinter in someone else's eye, but he doesn't see the log in his own eye, something like that. So, we should always keep a neutral, fair analysis of ourselves that will make us better people to associate with. It will be a lot. Imagine that poor young policeman, he had to put up with that businessman. What an unpleasant experience for him. What kind of a relationship did that was that? The policeman has to meet the man, and he has to be criticized, and then he has to get into a fight. He has to wrestle with them and fight, you know, call the police. He was just trying to do his duty. Why? Because the other person had the wrong conception of himself. He was carried away, puffed up. So let's not be puffed up. We are puffed up, but we should try to recognize it and reduce it. Recognize our faults. Okay? Next point. Any questions so far? Everything's clear? Yes?
And we feel that they are very painful and they are very harmful for our spiritual life. But why we still cannot pluck them out, even though we feel that they are so bad?
Yes, that's a good point. The answer is that we don't really understand how bad they are. That's one problem. We don't really understand how bad they are. Second of all, we don't really believe that we have them that much. First of all, we don't think they're that bad. And even if it is that bad, I don't have it very much. I have a little. So, I'll be patient with it. And, to some extent, that's also correct. To some extent, we must be patient, otherwise we'll become too frustrated when the bad qualities don't go away immediately. So we do have to be somewhat patient. But if we were totally sincere, for example, then all the bad qualities would go away instantly. But because we're only partially interested in solving the problem. We somewhat like these problems. We somewhat, there's a story about I think Prabhupada told about a man, he's holding a tree and he's saying, let me go, let me go. But the tree's not holding you, you're holding the tree. So we're attached. We like these things. We like lust. We like greed. We like laziness. We like uncleanliness. If someone says, oh, look at your room, why don't you clean it up? Say, I like it like this. I like it. I feel good like this. Someone else, ooh, it's all dirty and filthy. I like it. We've become accustomed to it. We like filth. Someone says, why are you lusting after this other person? I like it. Makes me feel good. I enjoy it. So we have low tastes due to ignorance and passion. Our tastes are quite low. So now we have to raise our culture, raise our consciousness to a higher level. Then we'll see, oh yeah, this place is. Reminds me, when Prabhupada was in New York in the beginning, there was one time, you know, he was staying in the Bowery and his roommate took an overdose of drugs and became mad and violent. So Prabhupada had to leave immediately. So he went over to a friend's house, one of his students, and then they went over to another friend's house, a student. So it was kind of early in the morning, 7:30 or something like that. So for this other person, he had been up all night. He always stayed up all night, musician. So when they came in, the television was still running from the night before. It didn't get turned off. And now there were some cartoons on. You know what cartoons are? So Prabhupada came in and said, oh, this is nonsense, the cartoons. And the person said, oh yeah, it is nonsense. So in other words, it took someone like to come from the outside with a higher consciousness to point out this is nonsense on the television. Otherwise he wouldn't have noticed it. He would have thought, it's okay, cartoons. So we are attached, to answer your question, we're attached to our anarchists. We're attached to this level of ignorance and passion. And we don't particularly feel that it's that important to give these things up. And even if I think it's important to give it up, I don't think I have it so bad. A little bit of an art. That's why it takes so long. Okay, any other questions? Okay, next point is don't create enemies unnecessarily. Casting the blame on someone else. It's very easy to do that. It's his fault. Why did this not happen? His fault. That really harms relationships. I remember I had one when I was young. I think it was one of the first jobs I ever had. I think I was just 16. I was working in some restaurant. And the owner, he also worked there. So he'd tell you to do something. And every time I did it, he would complain. Oh, you did it wrong. And everything I did, he said was wrong. Oh, you did that wrong. Can't you learn anything? I told you so many times. You know, what's wrong with you? Oh, now I have to do it. So you can imagine. Relationship wasn't very sweet. I hated it. I think I only worked there for a few days. I couldn't tolerate it. Because he had created a kind of inimical situation where he was always blaming the other party. So naturally, it's not very relishable. So I quit. Now, if someone had been more expert, he would have said, "Oh, very nice, you did a good job on that. Next time," just like Prabhupada did. You know the story when Prabhupada, at the wedding of Nandarani? Who knows that story? From Leelamrita. Do you read Leelamrita here? Yeah? So I'll remind you. So she was getting married in San Francisco. This was 1976. And it was the wedding day, so Prabhupada told her she should come and help cook the feast. So she came. And Prabhupada had one pot. And it had black on it. It was completely black. You know, like our pots. Maybe your pots are not so good. Your pots are clean? No black on them? Let's hope so. Anyway, this pot was completely black. So, she took the pot and she started scrubbing it, and you know, a little bit came off, but she figured the rest was just integrated with the pot. You know what integrated means? You know, she figured it was just part of the pot. So she brought it back, it was a little bit cleaner, and Prabhupada said, "Oh, very nice, very good. Now can you just get this rest of this little black off here?" So she went back and, you know, she scrubbed and scrubbed and scrubbed, and she got some more off. And she brought it back and said, "Oh, very nice, very nice. Now can you get this little bit of black left here? Can you get this part?" So she went back. She spent hours. But finally she cleaned the whole pot. Because he was so expert. Imagine if he had said, "Oh, you fool. Look at all the black is still there. You failed. You're useless. You're nonsense." No. But he was encouraging. He didn't make an enemy. He made a friend. "Oh, thank you very much. You're helping. You're doing a good job." So, be careful about creating enemies unnecessarily. In this world, there's already enough enemies. Therefore, Prabhupada said, if you're going to speak something critical of another, you can speak it if you must, but don't put it in writing. Because if you put it in writing, then you notice Prabhupada didn't put things in writing when he criticized sometimes other leaders or scientists or things, but he didn't put their names in writing. So be careful about creating enemies unnecessarily. You already have enough enemies. You don't need to create more. Be careful about getting into conflicts over things that are not required. Okay? This brings us to a relationship being a teacher or a leader. Sometimes we have to do that. So there's four very important things if you're going to be a teacher or a leader. First one is to know your subject well, or your field well. You have to know what you're talking about. How can you teach, or how can you lead if you don't know what you're doing? Second thing is to live according to what we teach. So we have to be exemplary also. If I tell everyone that they should come to Mangalarti is that thing that happens at 4:30 in the morning in the temple. So if I tell everyone, "You all must come to Mangalarti," and I don't go to Mangalarti, what will happen? Eventually others will think, "Well, wait a minute. Why am I going to Mangalore's place? He's not going. If I tell others, you should chant 16 rounds a day, but if I don't chant 16 rounds a day, then I'm not a good teacher. Okay, third point is to present the knowledge palatably. You know what palatably means? Palatably? What's the word? Again?
Mogus.
Yeah. So, present it nicely. Not in a harsh way. Even though you're the teacher or the leader, it doesn't mean that you have the right to abuse those under your care. Isn't it? Like if you study in a course and a teacher. If the teacher is very proud and arrogant and speaks down, condescending, not very nice. But if he speaks, he honors his students. He gives them respect, and that's appreciated. Even though it's recognized that he has greater knowledge and he's in a superior position, still he should be respectful to his students. Okay? And then the fourth point is very similar, to maintain respect for the students and followers. There was a movie that many years ago, and in the movie there was a woman, she was a former nun, and she was teaching some children about music. So she made a song, Do, a deer, a female deer, Ray, a drop of golden sun, me, a name I call myself, Fa, a long, long way to run. So this is Do, Re, Mi, Fa. She's teaching me musical. So she made it palatable. She made a song and she sang it. And made it very easy for the children to learn. Why not make it easier for them to learn? Why make it difficult? And then, actually she had several songs. And they were really classics in terms of teaching. They really established the mood that a teacher should have for the students. One of her songs was getting to know you, getting to know all about you, getting to like you, getting to hope you like me, getting to know you, putting it my way but nicely, you are precisely my cup of tea. So, that line there, putting it my way but nicely, that's the most important point. Teacher has to put it their way but nicely. Getting to know, this is the whole idea, it's a relationship. So when you're the leader or the teacher, you have to establish that relationship with the student. And it should be like this. Friendly. Putting it your way because you're the teacher. It's not that we become so liberal that we say, well, whatever you think is okay, what is your opinion? Like nowadays they have more of this. They have discussion groups. No conclusion. Everyone comes up with their own opinion. But if you're the teacher, you should have a better opinion than the students. Otherwise, why are you the teacher? They'll say, well, I'm not really a teacher, I'm a facilitator. Point is, if you're taking the position of leader or teacher, then you have to know better than your students. Otherwise, it's a mockery. Prabhupada said, he's not a teacher, he's a cheater. If he's claiming he's teaching, but he doesn't know, then he's not a teacher, he's a cheater. Okay? Any questions on these points? Yeah?
That's interesting. You said that one must know one subject well.
So,
I understand that it means one is, they might have, if the teacher or leader knows their like weaknesses and good sides and tendencies and different qualities.
You know our subject, know ourselves. Sounds like you're saying we should know ourselves.
Yeah.
No, the subject. Oh, subject means the topic of discussion. If I'm discussing about the Bhagavad Gita, then I should know something about Bhagavad Gita.
I understand the topic means.
Yeah, the person.
Okay.
Other. All right. Next point. This is a little more involved, a little more technical. So I have to give you full attention for this one. Wearing different hats. So here's the question. Can a person who is officially in the position of the authority have a friendly relationship with his subordinate? Understand the question? Let's say, Tathavada, okay, he's the temple president, whatever. So he's the authority. Now, can he have a friendly relationship with the other members of the temple? And the answer is, yes. But he has to have different hats. Sometimes he wears the authority hat. When he wears the authority hat, and he says, okay, load up this van immediately, we have to move, then what hat is he wearing? He's wearing the authority hat. And that means you have to do, you take it like an order. You don't take it as a friendly suggestion. Huh? You understand? Now he's in the mood of temple president, he's wearing temple president hat. Now another time, he may be sitting around taking prasadam, and Tathavada may take off the president's hat, and he may put on the, you know, friendly godbrother hat. Put his arm around you, take some of your sweet ball, make a joke. You can joke back. You can. Because he's taken off that hat. He took off the present, now he's the friendly hat. But he has to be careful not to mix the hats too much. For example, now he's being friendly. So if you make some mistake in this friendly mood, and you put something in your mouth with your left hand, you can't say, hey, don't eat with your left hand. You can't put the other hat on very quick. Because if he does, it will make it very unpleasant for the relationship. You have to let it go. Right? You've done that. You have to, alright, I'm being friendly now. I may have to overlook it. This is not the right time. Okay? So in other words, you can be friends. You can have different relationships. But they have to be somewhat systematic. So that everyone's comfortable with it. And then, the other party will know when you've put on that hat. It's like wife, husband. Sometimes the husband, he takes charge. He tells the wife, okay, get in the car now, close the door. She has to do it. She understands by the tone of his voice, this is not time for, light discussions. He means it. There's some very important thing. He's in charge. But other times, relationship is different. They have an intimate relationship. Sometimes he may even ask her opinion, and she may be the authority. So the relationship is not just linear, it may have multi dimensions. And we have to be consistent, or shall we say, ready to relate in those different aspects of the relationship in order to keep it nice. Krishna does that. You see, Krishna relates differently with different persons in different circumstances. Okay, you understand that about wearing different hats? We can learn from the dog. Actually, we can learn many things from a dog. Dog is expert in relationships. Why do you think they say dog is man's best friend? Because dog is very expert in relationships. He really knows how to please his master. Now, when the master says, come, he knows, okay, I better come. But sometimes when the master wants to play and joke around, then the dog, he enjoys that too. Because he knows that now my master is playing with me as an equal, as a friend. Maybe even roll on the ground together. Okay. But as soon as the master assumes the position again of authority, the dog accepts that. So, and he's expert at doing that. He's really expert, and that's why everyone likes dogs. They're good at it. Because they're basically humble. They're basically quite humble towards the human master. They consider themselves subordinate to their master. So similarly, if we're humble, that is, you could say, the primary ingredient for a good relationship. Humility. If we're basically very humble, then the relationships will be nice. Lord Chaitanya says, Chanadapi Sumitena, Tarodapi Sahishkana, Amanina Manadeena Kirtaniya Sadhavi. One should think oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. That's the mood that we should be in. Okay. Next, unless there's any more questions, we'll go on to this topic is 6 steps to good relationships. Step 1, offering gifts to others. If you want to make a nice relationship, offer a gift. When I was in Latvia, I visited Latvia sometimes. We were driving through the city, Riga, and on this particular day, all the little children had flowers in their hand. They had bunches of flowers. And I said, what are they doing? What are all these flowers? And the devotee driving said, this is the first day of school, so they're all bringing flowers to the teacher. Do they do that here? No. But in Latvia they do that. Very nice. And you could see, as you drove by, you'd see the mothers, sometimes the mothers would be on the street giving the flowers to the children and sending them off. So now you may say, wow. These children, they don't really love the teacher. Their parents told them to take the flower. They're just doing it out of force or mechanically. So you think it won't have an effect? No, it still works. Those children, they have to carry all those flowers all the way to school. Have to carry them very carefully. They can't smash them. Their mother says, you carry these flowers, make sure you don't break them, then give them to the teacher. So the child has to do it. Why? Because the child is following the instruction of the mother. Child wants to please the mother. Either you say the child wants to please the mother in a positive way, or The child wants to avoid negative punishment. Same thing. Some way or another, the child wants to cooperate. So she takes those flowers all the way to school, and then, I don't know how they do it, whether they give it one at a time or all at a time, I don't know how they do it. But either way, you can imagine, teacher comes in, they said, teacher, and they come up and they give their flowers. They feel good, isn't it? The child feels good, because naturally the teacher is superior. And the teacher is giving them knowledge. The teacher is doing them kindness. So now they're reciprocating. It's some love. Maybe not a lot of love, but some love. It's an expression of appreciation from the mother and from the child. Child may not understand how much the teacher is giving me right now, but later on, child will appreciate. So this expression. Now what does the teacher feel? If you were the teacher and all your students came and offered you some flowers, what would you think? You would think this is very nice. It's nice of them to do this. So this creates good relationship. Gifts, giving gifts. Even on Christmas, they give gifts. It creates a nice relationship. But when you give a gift, be careful not to put any strings on the gift. Now I'm giving you a gift worth $10. I'm expecting a gift back from you for at least $10, maybe $20. That gift is not so pure. It's business. Business? People give gifts in business also, but it's not quite the same. It doesn't have the same effect. Because everybody knows in business, if you meet some businessman and he says, here, I want to give you a gift, we know what he's thinking. He's thinking that I give you this gift and you'll buy this from me worth so many thousands of dollars and I make more money, so it's not pure. So best thing is if you can give a gift without expecting anything in return. That's nice. Then, that's called vidati, offering gifts to others. Then, the next one, number two, is pratigunati, receiving gifts. Let's say someone gives you a gift. Okay, now, back to the example of the teacher. She gets these flowers. Right? All the students give her flowers. Now what is she supposed to do now? She's supposed to receive the gifts. How would you like it? What would be the best thing she could do? Go ahead.
Maybe she can again give some more gifts.
What else? First of all, let's take care of these gifts.
Give some candy.
No. The students have given her some flowers. What is she going to do?
Show her appreciation.
Yeah. Yes. She says, thank you very much. First thing. Is that all? That's nice. She said thank you. Then what does she do? They come up and offer flowers. Does she take them? Or does she just say thank you? Huh? She takes them also. So she says thank you and she takes them. Then what? What does she do next? Or she read the book. Anyone who didn't read the book?
Tell her what she's going to do with them.
Hmm?
Tell her what she's going to do with them.
She has to put them in water.
Yeah.
She can't just throw them. She says, thank you very much. Right in her waistband. Imagine if she did that, and when the children went home, and they asked their mother, said, did you give the flowers to the teacher? Yes, mother. What did the teacher do? She went, threw it right in the middle. Mother will be shocked. All the mothers will come. Because it's disrespectful to the person who gave the gift. You have to show respect for the gift, not just the person, but the gift also. You have to put the flowers in water. And then, let's say you put them in water. Where? In the backyard? Outside? No. Inside? You have to put them in the room to show that you appreciate the flowers. All these things are required if you're receiving gifts. You may say, too much trouble. I don't want your flowers. Keep them. Well, then you ruin the relationship. The relationship's shot. If those children come up and say, here, flowers, teacher. I don't want your flowers. It's too much trouble. Get them out of here. Well, the relationship is ruined. So relationships take energy. They take cultivation. That's what it requires, is to make, to develop, to cultivate relationships. Am I right or wrong? Is this correct? So we have to consider. When someone's giving us a gift, we have a responsibility. If we want to create, if we want to continue the relationship. Prabhupada was expert at this. He did it naturally. He didn't have to do it like we may have to do it mechanically. But Prabhupada did it naturally. Someone would give him a gift and he would thank them so much, and sometimes he'd put it on the wall. He'd say, frame this. He'd tell his servant, immediately get a frame, put this on the wall. So what does that do for the relationship? It's wonderful. You give someone something and they put it on the wall. It makes the relationship very sweet. So we just have 1 minute left. If anyone has any last question, I can briefly, I'll just say quickly number three. Third one is revealing one's mind confidentially.
I think it's good if we go on these six, you know, to them.
These six. We'll go briefly. Revealing one's mind confidentially. You tell them something that is on your mind. Something that you don't need to tell anyone. You confide. You confide in someone. You know what that does? That makes the relationship very close. You confide in them. You tell them something very important. Because, why? You won't tell something very important to someone you don't trust, you don't want to create a relationship with. If you want to make a good friendship, then, or if you want to create a relationship, then part of that is you have to speak confide in that person. Then the next one is four. Inquire confidentially. You also ask them what their opinion. In other words, you want to hear from them. You care about their opinion. Right? That's what it means. Prichiti means you inquire confidentially. What do you think? What is your opinion? Well, that creates a relationship. You know that. Even if you're driving in the street and you don't know the way, and you stop and say, sir, can you tell me the way to such and such? And he starts telling you. You've inquired very confidentially, very submissively. And what happens? After he tells you, you've made a friend. You become a little bit friendly. The relationship is developed. Why? Because you inquired confidentially and he revealed his mind confidentially. So this is two principles of relationship. And number five is bhunkte, accepting some foodstuffs. Someone gives some food to you when you accept it. The relationship is there. It's established. That's why Prabhupada said that we want in our society that all the ladies, all the girls, should learn how to cook very nicely and be chaste. And then we'll arrange that they get nice husbands. You have to know how to cook nice. Otherwise the relationship won't be good. Because man, husband wants to eat. He has to eat. And wife has to cook nicely. So, you see in all the Vedic households, isn't it? All the Indian ladies, they teach the young girls how to cook. They assist and they learn how to cook very nicely. This is called bhunkte. And the last one is bhojayate. Means, you feed someone else. The first one is, you eat what they offer you. And now this one is bhojayate, you have to feed them. So these two are somewhat kind of connected. When someone offers you something to eat, if you accept it, then the relationship is developed. If you don't, if you won't eat it, then the relationship will not develop. It's like sometimes we cook prasadam, we Hare Krishna devotees. But because some of us are not born in Vedic families, others, people in India, they won't accept our cooking, our food. If they know you're a lesser. They won't accept it. So, that makes the relationship, it doesn't go forward so much. Now you may say, well, does that mean that if someone on the street offers me some unmentionable thing, do I have to eat it to make a nice relationship? No. You have to use discretion also. We eat something if it's fit to be eaten. And of course the devotee knows that eating means eating Krishna prasad, spiritual food. So this means offering food. Because it's a group of devotees, if this it was a group of non-devotees, then we would just stick to the food, offering food and accepting food. But because it's devotees, means offering prasad, I'm accepting prasad. Okay? Any questions on these?
Maharaj, sometimes it has been said that like this giving gifts means also giving services to others.
Yeah.
But many times we don't feel very happy when others want to give some service to us. Like we tend to go away from such situations. So is this a good attitude?
Oh, I see. Yes, offering a service. Well, we should learn. Of course, on one side, it's good. Because we don't want to accept service from others, right? The story of Rupa and Sanatana. Wasn't it? Rupa wanted to make a feast. And so Radharani came. He wanted to make a feast for his brother, Sanatana Goswami, because it was Vyasa Puja Day. So this beautiful young lady came and she brought all these nice foodstuffs. And she cooked this nice feast. And when Sanatana got the feast, he asked Rupa Goswami, where did you get all this? Well, this nice young lady, I think she was a Gopi, cowherd girl. Wow, you took service from Radharani? Shouldn't do that. So yes, we don't want to take service on one hand. But on the other hand, we have to be gracious also. If someone does offer service, we have to accept it graciously. If someone ironed your dhoti, you come back from Sankirtan one day and some devotee has ironed your dhoti. You can't. And he offers you, he says, here, here's your dhoti. I ironed it. You can't say, you rascal, you nonsense. You're not supposed to serve me. Oh, you say, thank you very much. I don't deserve it, but thank you. Gracious. Thank you very much. We'll stop there. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Shri Gopitai ki jai, Shri Maharaj ki jai.